road, his mouth sad. "Traedon!" someone called from across the camp. Kestrel saw the silver-headed man approach. Soldiers fell away from him like shed water. The emperor approached his general, whose face changed, becoming full of something older than she was. Firelight striped the emperor's cheek as he leaned to murmur in her father's ear. She saw that slight smile and remembered the pleasure the emperor took in his games, how he could make a move and wait for months to see its final play. But there was no scheme in his expression now. Her father answered him. She stood too far away to hear what they said to one another, yet she was close enough to see that their friendship was solid and true. Kestrel looked away. She walked toward the dunes, careful not to retrace her steps and risk smudging the line of powder that, once lit, must burn directly from Arryn to the wagon. The bushes where Arryn waited were thick black scribbles. Her cheeks were wet. Valorian soldiers didn't look as she passed. She wiped her face. Sand hissed under her hurried boots. She left the camp behind. She'd almost reached the bushes when she heard someone following her, pacing the sand, right in her tracks, coming up close. She slowed, hand on her dagger, heart in her mouth. She turned.
Kestrel?
36. Her hand dropped from her dagger's hilt.
Varix.
He stood awkwardly in the moonlight, long and slopey, shoulders narrow, eyes large, his fair hair ruffled and feathery. When he met her gaze, he let out such a large breath that his chest seemed to cave in.
"I was so worried for you," he said.
Kestrel crossed the sand and flung herself into his open arms.
"I tried to help," he murmured.
"I know.
I sent a key to the prison camp."
"I got it."
"I'm ashamed of myself."
"Varix."
"I couldn't do more. I wanted to. I should have."
She pulled back, stared at him.
"That key was everything to me." "Not enough. My father. Did he find out?"
Her blood went cold.
"Did he punish you?" "He talked as if he knew it was me. Well, dear boy, have you heard? A prisoner tried to escape the north. Somehow, how do you think, she laid her filthy little hands on a key? Never acknowledging that the prisoner was you, never accusing me of having sent the key, just watching and smiling. He said, he told me that the prisoner was tortured, killed, and I..."
Varix's face twisted.
"I'm all right. I'm here."
He didn't look convinced.
"What did he do to you?"
Varix flopped one hand.
"Nothing. Tell me. Nothing that mattered. I think he enjoyed it, that I knew, that I tried. Failed. I have my spies in the court. I must, and when you disappeared, I found out too quickly what had happened to you. He wanted me to know. All the while, he said nothing of your absence, only informed me of the story he'd tell the court, and that I'd be sailing to the Southern Isles. He said he'd watch over Risha while I was away."
Varix thrust his hands in his pockets, slumped his shoulders.
"He said, I know how you care for the Eastern Princess."
"Did he?"
"No."
His voice went hard.
"He knows that if he did anything to her, I'd kill him. She's safe in the capital."
"What are you doing here? Varix, you're no fighter." He laughed a little.
"I'd have said the same of you.
Yet, look at you. You knew it was me.
You have this way when you walk. You stride."
"I didn't expect to see the Emperor here, let alone you."
"I'm mostly here to be looked at. The Emperor came with me in tow for the morale of the troops. There have been a few military setbacks in this campaign."
He peered at her.
"You're doing..."
She wasn't sure how to answer. For the first time, it occurred to her that it might not matter that Varix was her friend. Maybe he would seize her anyway. Maybe he'd cry an alarm. Maybe he couldn't be her friend when it seemed so obvious that she was his people's enemy. She took a step back, then stopped when hurt flickered across his face.
"I think," Varix said gently, "that your father knows it's your doing."
"My father?"
I didn't make much of it before, but after the Valorian victory on the beach, an officer mentioned the ambush along the road near Aerlith. Said things about Orin. What would be done to him if caught alive?
Kestrel's stomach twisted.
Said something about that slave with the clever tricks.
In Varric's pause, she could hear the foulness of what he didn't repeat.
Your father made no reply at first. Then, not his tricks, not his alone. And the officer smirked and said, You mean the no-nosed barbarian?
But I don't think now that the general did mean the Eastern Prince. After the battle on the beach, I saw him searching. He went among the prisoners taken. He turned over bodies in the sand. The way he looked.
Don't tell him you saw me.
Maybe he should know.
Varric, don't. Swear.
Worriedly, he scanned her face.
You have my word. But...
He raked a hand through his fine hair, then peered at her through narrowed eyes. He lifted the empty bag at her hip, dropped it, rubbed his fingers and thumb together, and sniffed the unmistakable odor of black powder. A slow horror stole over his face.
What exactly are you doing here?
Just let me walk away. Forget you saw me, please.
I can't do that. You'd make me responsible for whatever you're going to do.
No one will get hurt if you keep people away from the supply wagons. Make up some excuse. No one will die.
Tonight, maybe. What about tomorrow, when we need what you plan to destroy? You're after the black powder, aren't you?
She said nothing. Softly, he said,
I could stop you so easily, right now.
If you did, you'd hand your father yet another victory. He sighed.
The awful thing is, part of me wants to please him, despite everything.
No, please don't. You can't.
But I do want to. And I hate myself for wanting to please him, and I can't think of a way to do it without hurting you. Maybe you could think of a way, but would never tell me. You'd fall into my father's hands again, and your father's hands, and I'd never forgive myself.
Kestrel told him that she would miss him. She told him, quietly, as a sound of waves pushed and pulled at the night, that she wished he were her brother, that she was sorry and grateful to know him. There was no sound other than the waves as she walked away. When she reached Arryn, he released the parted bushes and lowered the eastern crossbow he'd held cranked at the ready.
You wouldn't have, she stated.
Arryn looked at her. He certainly would.
Varric is my friend.
Arryn unloaded the crossbow. His fingers were trembling.
You greeted him like a friend, he acknowledged. But...
They both looked back toward the camp. The slender shadow of the Valorian prince slowly retraced his steps. He dissolved into the camp's firelight, a good distance from the supply wagons. Kestrel untied the empty sack from her waist and dusted her hands, her clothes.
Matches. Now,
Arryn's hands still weren't sure of themselves. He fumbled with the box. She took it, struck a match, and touched it to the trail of black powder she'd left behind. It sparked, lit, and burned down the line. They ran. The explosion blossomed over the beach. They stayed off the road as they rode through the dark. Their pace was slow. Moonlight painted the land. They were silent. But Kestrel knew that it couldn't be due to the same thing, because she hadn't told Arryn that she'd seen her father in the Valorian camp. The sight of him lingered with her. Her love for him closed within her like a fist. Nervous, bruised, she despised it. Wasn't it the love of a beaten animal slinking back to its master? Yet here was the truth. She missed her father. It seemed too awful to tell Arryn. But finally, when they stopped to sleep, not bothering with a tent, just bedding down in a hollow they'd trampled in the tall grass with their boots, Arryn spoke. He slid a hand under her tunic to touch her bare back, then stopped.
Is this all right?
She wanted to explain that she hadn't thought she'd ever bear anyone's touch on her scarred back, that it should revolt him and revolt her. Yet his touch made her feel soft and new.
Yes,
He pushed the shirt up, seeking the lash marks, tracing their length. She let herself feel it, and shivered, and thought of nothing. But attention grew. He was still, but for his hand. Kestrel said, "What's wrong?"
"Your life would have been easier if you had married the Valorian prince."
She drew herself up so that she could face him. The scent of black powder clung to them both. His skin smelled like a blown-out candle.
"But not better," she said.
It was the next day's end when they caught up with Rashar's army, which had stopped, oddly, at a time too early to make camp, and rather late for a moment's rest. More than that, it was the uncertainty of the soldiers that gave the halt a strange feeling. They looked as if they'd had no orders at all. They held ranks, but loosely, and were murmuring among themselves, armor still buckled, horses saddled. Several remained mounted. A Harani soldier toyed with her horse's reins. A Dakran eyed her, as if he wished his horse had reins, so that he could do something with his empty hands. When Arryn and Kestrel rode up to the vanguard, all eyes lifted. Faces turned to Arryn, seeking an explanation, relieved because here, at last, was an answer. But Arryn didn't even understand the question.
"What has happened?" he asked the two nearest soldiers on their horses.
"Someone came for our prince," the Dakran said.
Arryn glanced at Kestrel, alert to the hesitation in the Dakran's voice. Arryn wondered if he needed to translate for her.
"Someone took him away," she asked the man in his language.
The soldier clicked his teeth. "No."
"But I heard that his face became terrible, truly, that no one could look at it. Some worry that she..."
"She?"
"Brings news of the war's end, that we're to abandon the campaign and go home."
The soldier glanced sideways at Arryn.
"Some hope for it."
"Your queen?"
Arryn asked. But it was not, in fact, the queen who had come for her brother. 37. Rashar was waiting alone outside his tent. Kestrel saw what the soldier had meant about Rashar's face. She'd grown used to the prince's mutilations. She rarely noticed them anymore. But now an emotion so scored his features that his face became pure in its damage, a mask of loss, twisted with anger and shame. Arryn went to him, eyes wide with concern. He spoke swiftly in Dakran. What was wrong? What had happened?
"My sister won't speak with me."
Rashar cleared his throat.
"Not without you."
His gaze flicked from Arryn to Kestrel.
"Both of you."
Then Kestrel remembered that Rashar had more than one sister. The three of them entered the tent, the prince last, shoulders tight, eyes roaming everywhere except to where Risha stood near the tent's center, her Valorian braids gone. Her black hair was cut close to the skull in the Eastern style, her eyes rimmed with royal colors, her limbs lithe. The air in the tent was hot and dense.
"Sister,"
Rashar began, then faltered. She ignored him. Her gaze went to Kestrel, who didn't understand the young woman's presence here, or the animosity toward her brother, whom Risha must not have seen since having been taken hostage by the Empire as a child.
"I've come to bargain," Risha said.
Visibly hurt, her brother said,
"I would give you anything."
"Not with you."
"I'm so sorry. Risha, little sister."
"I trust you," she said to Arryn. "As for this one,"
she tipped her chin at Kestrel,
"Verix holds her in high regard."
Rashar said,
"I regret every day since I saw you last."
"What do you regret most? This?"
She gestured at his mutilations.
"No."
"How you let our older sister persuade you?"
"Yes."
"Or when you saw the Valorians take me?"
"Yes."
"Maybe it was when you explained to a child that she wouldn't be gone long, that she must pretend to be surprised when she's taken hostage. All she has to do is kill one man."
Kestrel felt Arryn's tension, the way he looked at the prince. Arryn's worry was plain, his hands still at his sides, yet slightly open, as if his friend might shatter, and Arryn needed to be ready to catch the pieces.
"Could it be so hard to kill a man?" Risha continued. "Especially when we consider her talent, Look at the little girl's grace, her skill with a blade. A prodigy, surely. Never before seen in one so young. Yes, the assassination of the Valorian Emperor should be easy for her.
Then Kestrel understood. Roshara said, I regret it all.
I have wondered over the years whether you were weak to let my sister rule you, or simply stupid.
I didn't think
about what would happen to me after I killed the Emperor. Brother, I thought about it when I walked the halls of the Imperial Palace, when I learned their language, played childhood games with their prince. I thought about what the Valorians would do to the little girl who murdered their Emperor.
A pressure tightened Kestrel's lungs. Her father, when he'd refused to be her father anymore, had transformed into something else. A block of opaque glass, maybe. She wanted to heft the weight of his betrayal and show it to Risha, to ask if it looked and weighed the same as what the princess carried, if it ever got any lighter or could diminish like ice. Yet Kestrel also saw the ruined expression in Rashar's eyes. Maybe she shouldn't pity him, yet she did. Arryn said,
Name what you want.
Risha settled into a teak chair.
I will never kill Verix's father, but...
She flipped her hand at the three of them.
You could, with my help, get rid of the Emperor, and you can win this war without open battle.
Wait, Kestrel said. Cautious, focused now, she said. You're not even supposed to be here. Verix said you were safe at court. At the sound of Verix's name, some of the anger left Risha.
Verix had left. There was nothing to hold me there. I escaped.
And found your way here, so easily. The princess shrugged.
It's not hard to find safe passage if you're willing to kill for it.
In Harani, Arryn asked Kestrel,
What are you thinking?
She noticed the switch in language and recognized that Arryn believed it was safe to speak in Harani, but she didn't risk an answer in front of Risha. She didn't say that General Trajan could have sent the embittered Eastern princess with tempting bait. Kestrel feared a trap.
What kind of help are you offering? I can give you a location where the Emperor will be, separate from the army, with a light guard.
How did you come by this information?
The court.
Kestrel didn't like this. It was too easy.
You still haven't said what you want out of this bargain.
Risha kept her eyes on Arryn.
Promise that Verix won't be hurt. Protect him.
Startled, defensive, Arryn said,
I don't wish the Valorian prince any harm.
But Roshar's face changed, and Kestrel suddenly realized why.
No, she told him, her voice rising. You mustn't. His death wouldn't serve you. You should want him to inherit the Empire. He'd be a friend to the East.
Doesn't matter, Roshar said. Our queen will smash the Empire to pieces if she can. Killing the Emperor might win the war. Verix might become a political ally. But if he inherits Valoria, that country will always be a threat to us. And to you, Arryn.
Someone else would step into Verix's place, Kestrel argued. If the prince died, the Senate would elect a new emperor.
Arryn's gray eyes went flat.
It'd be the Valorian general.
Roshar shrugged.
Unless we eliminate him as well. Knock down all the principal pieces in Borderlands. And what's left for your opponent? Surrender.
You forget an important piece in this game, Risha said. Me.
Roshar's shoulders tensed. Kestrel felt a growing disquiet.
Verix and I would marry, said the princess.
An alliance between East and West, Roshar said slowly.
Kestrel sought Arryn's gaze. When he met her eyes, she couldn't read them.
Not so good for you, little Harani, Roshar told Arryn. Your peninsula would get lost in the middle.
The risk had always been there, even if they won the war, that Harran would be retaken by the West or dwindle into the East. But now Kestrel saw it as if seeing the future, how a marriage between the Empire and Dakra could lead to one power ruling the entire continent. Harran would vanish.
Decide, Risha said, or I leave. My information for Verix's safety. Yes or no?
Arryn met Kestrel's gaze. grim mouth, hooded eyes asking whether this was worth it. She thought about the Emperor's hand on her father's shoulder, the key Varix had sent to the northern prison. A friend, a good heart. But Roshar wasn't wrong. Kestrel knew what her father would choose in her place. She realized that she'd come to rely on his voice in her head, that it had saved her on the battlefield. Even now, the very thought of his advice was soothing, even as being so soothed repulsed her. It didn't matter what her father would choose. She was not her father.
"Yes," Kestrel said. "I agree."
"Then I do, too," said Arryn.
Roshar gazed at his hands.
"No one can promise anyone safety. Never, much less in war." "We can promise to try," Arryn told him. "And you can shield him from the Dacron Queen."
Roshar nodded, but distractedly, with a disbelieving wince, as if someone had presented him with a portrait where his features were whole, his mutilations erased, and he had no words to express how wrong this vision of him was.
"I overheard the Senate leader say that if Valoria succeeded in seizing the beach, the Emperor would move inland with a small contingent and take the Scythia estate,"
Risha said.
"The manor there is luxurious," Arryn said, "but it has nothing strategically interesting for the Emperor or the army. Vineyards. The grapes won't even be ripe this time of year. There's little to be gained in terms of supplies. The estate is north of the road to the city, not convenient as a base for attack."
Kestrel, however, knew the Emperor.
"But the manor is beautiful."
Arryn lifted one shoulder.
"The stained glass windows were well known before the war. There were rooms that seemed to be made of colored light. Or so it was said. I wouldn't know. I've never seen it."
"The Emperor enjoys beauty."
Arryn's hand twitched, as if he'd meant to touch, compulsively, the scar that ran deep into his left cheek, but had stopped himself in time. It wrenched Kestrel's heart to see him remember how he'd been attacked by the Emperor's minion, his face sliced open. She hadn't been there when it happened. Still, she saw it now as if she'd been a bystander, paralyzed, robbed of sound, her throat raw, bones like lead. And she saw herself in her suite in the Imperial Palace, dressed in red, her shoulders laced with golden wire. Kestrel had forgotten this. It came to her, the tight, gorgeous bodice, folds of crimson samite. The Emperor had selected her wedding dress. He had selected her, had cut her from the cloth of her home, then stitched her into place beside his son. He had embroidered how she'd look and who she'd become.
"I have chosen you, Kestrel, and will make you into everything my son cannot be. Someone fit to take my place."
It was difficult for Kestrel to move, as if she had indeed become a cloth doll, the stitches drawn tight. She touched Arryn's arm, felt how the muscles had hardened.
"You think that he seeks only to destroy?"
"Yes," he muttered.
"Beauty moves him. He destroys it only when he can't possess it."
"I asked myself," the Emperor whispered in her ear, "whether it was really possible that you might betray your country so easily, especially when it had been practically given to you."
"He loves to shape things."
A remembered helplessness shrouded her. The prince and his sister faded in her vision, were present but unimportant. She felt strange. Her blood prickled as if something were growing inside her.
"Every piece in place, arranged to his satisfaction. It's why he enjoys games. You know, don't you, how a game with a perfect line of play becomes beautiful?"
"Yes, a growing thing. Thorny, a briar." Arryn's expression changed. She saw how he read her stillness. She wondered if she'd gone pale. Anxiety stole over his features.
"Kestrel, can I have a word with you?"
Outside the tent, night had come. He cupped her face in his hands.
"You don't look right."
"I'm fine."
"No, you look like a part of you has disappeared. Like you're not really here. Like..."
His hands fell away.
"You do when you're plotting something."
Which was how Kestrel realized that she was plotting something. That growing briar inside her was an idea.
"Kestrel."
She blinked, then noticed the hurt shape of his mouth. Arryn said, "Tell me." She started to speak. He cut through her first words. "No deceiving," he said.
"I wouldn't."
"Not again. After everything, don't keep me in the dark."
"Arryn, for someone who wants me to tell him something, you're doing an excellent job of not letting me speak."
"Oh." Rubbing a forefinger and thumb into his eyes, he gave her a rueful look. "Sorry."
"Risha could be a trap. We've no proof of her true allegiance, and while I know she cares for Varix, this might only make her firmly on Valoria's side. This story of the Emperor at the Scythia Manor could be a distraction. Worse, it could lure us into an ambush. But I also believe that the Emperor would leave the battlefield to stay in a luxurious manor known for its stained glass windows. He's let my father fight his battles for 2 decades. As Varric said, the Emperor is here only for show. Valoria is likely to win this war, and given our loss at Lerelin, its path to seize Heron's city is reasonably easy. Having destroyed some of their black powder helps us, but they still have the greater numbers, and their tactical position is strong. Why should the Emperor not quit the army camp for a feather bed and a view of the vineyards? It would be like him.
"Then I'll lead a small team there. Assassinate him. Death will guide me."
"No, I have a better plan for how to win this war." She told him what she had in mind, then returned to the tent to ask Rashar for his help. 38. In the rosy light of morning, Arryn raked a fistful of dry grass and scattered the thin yellow blades. Again. Kestrel, who sat near him, glanced up from what she was doing. She lifted one brow. So he stopped. He knew it was pure anxiety, that if he didn't do something with his hands, they'd tremble. Her hands were steady. She dipped a skinny paintbrush she'd made from horsehair, a twig and twine, into the small vial resting on a wide board that had become an impromptu table. A bite and sting set lay spread across the board, the tiles all face up. She flipped four of them and painted their blank backs. The liquid went on clear.
"Kestrel."
"Almost done."
"I worry the Emperor won't agree."
"I think he will."
"But the stakes..."
"Will amuse him."
"He'd gamble the outcome of a war?"
"Maybe, for the pleasure of beating me." She laid the paintbrush on the board. "But he won't win." She turned a snake tile onto its face and moved it close to one that she'd painted. She studied the two blank ivory backs. They looked nearly identical, save that the painted one had a slight shine. She lightly tapped the paintbrush's wooden end against the painted tile. It left no trace. The tile had dried. Arryn's stomach was a wormy knot.
"This game could go badly."
"That's why I'm cheating."
"Even with the marked tiles."
"It's a good plan."
"Yes, but he'll agree to play only if he believes the outcome won't matter. Even if you win, that is what will amuse him. Your expectation that he'll keep his word. He won't."
"All part of the game."
"If anything goes wrong, he'll hurt you." Kestrel turned away from the board, saw him rake another fistful of grass. It sounded like cloth being ripped apart.
"Not this time," she said. Arryn smelled smoke from Rashar's pipe before he heard the prince approach from behind. The sun was going down. The sky looked candied.
"Pretty," the prince commented.
"Storm colors. One's coming."
"I was thinking..."
Arryn turned to glance at the prince, alert to his quiet tone. Rashar avoided his gaze, but his black eyes were large, glassy. Arryn was about to speak, when Rashar cleared his throat and said,
"Now is a good time to remind you how generous I am."
Arryn refused to be distracted into a meaningless conversation, where Rashar simultaneously praised and mocked himself. He knew what troubled the prince.
"Give Risha time. She'll forgive you."
Rashar continued, as if he hadn't heard.
"The very soul of generosity. You ask for an ally in war, and lo, here I am. I dole out favors, even to your ghost. She asks, I give. What's more, I've selected 5 elite fighters to accompany her and my little sister to Scythia's manor. truly. I'm confident that Risha would be enough to keep Kestrel safe, but I thought you'd appreciate the extra protection.
Arn realized where this conversation was going, and it was as if the storm he'd predicted had already arrived.
No. Wait. A small team is best for infiltrating the manor. Silently, efficiently. No more than 7 people. 8. Sorry, Arn. You must remain with the army. You can't compel me to stay. Am I not your commander?
The sky deepened. Its oranges and reds were resinous. Arn's pulse leaped with anger. But this time Rashar's voice came low.
I need you. What?
The air whooshed out of him.
The Emperor might be in Scythia. He might not. What we know for certain is that an entire Valorian army, whose forces vastly outnumber ours, will be traveling up that road with a general, who would probably continue to fight regardless of what happens at Scythia. Are we to bet everything on Kestrel's game? I say we deal with the Valorians. I say no retreat.
You don't need me to fight a battle. Rashar tipped his head to one side, his shoulders shrugging, and opened his hands as if scattering seeds. The gesture, a Harani one, used to indicate doubt, made Arn angrier.
You don't, Arn insisted. You'd be fine without me. You're good at war.
Rashar met his gaze. The green paint around the prince's eyes was fresh, his expression sober.
You're better.
He didn't like to tell her what Rashar had asked, but he did, focused on adjusting the small lamp they'd set on the canvas tarp that covered the dirt floor of his tent. The lamp didn't burn well. Its oil was bad. It smoked. As he talked, he tinkered with the burner, the chimney. Then Arn stopped, realizing that he was close to destroying the thing between his hands. Kestrel sat up in the bedroll, unbound hair spilling over her bare shoulders. It was the color of candlelight. She said, Roshara's right. Arn struggled with his unease, didn't know what to say, dreaded blurting out the wrong thing. Finally, he settled on blunt truth.
You're taking a big risk. I don't want you to have to do it alone.
She sat in profile to him. Her hair had slid to curtain most of her face, but she shoved it back, meeting his gaze with her own firm one. It will work. He thought of the bite and sting tiles carefully stowed in a velvet bag. He scrubbed the heel of his hand against his scarred cheek, saw Kestrel's quiet regard, how her expression changed the way a story does, subtle, with shifts of detail, revealing. It calmed him a little to see her intelligence, vivid and clear.
I believe you, he said. I'll stay with the army. But it's strange to me that Rashar changed his mind. He was ready to retreat to the city.
Seeing Risha changed him.
Even so, it's hard to know what he really wants.
Arn explained how Rashar could lay claim to Harran, and in the eyes of his people, he'd only be taking what was legally his. Kestrel said nothing at first. Then,
it's not like you to question someone's friendship.
With a nauseated jolt, Arn thought of Cheat, who'd been his first friend after the invasion.
Maybe I should.
Maybe it would make you less yourself if you did.
And you? Do you trust Rashar?
She considered it.
Yes.
Arn let out a resigned sigh.
I do, too, even if I shouldn't.
Let the morning keep what belongs to the morning, Kestrel said,
but as if she wasn't paying attention to what she said. Then she blinked. Her jaw tightened. She blew out the lamp. He drew her to him.
What is it?
He murmured. Her heart beat against his palm.
It just means that you shouldn't borrow tomorrow's problems. Deal with today's.
But why does it upset you?
It was something my father would say.
She grew smaller in Arn's arms.
I can't face him.
You won't have to, he promised.
This he could do. Arn sensed his god listening. He felt the god's ascent fall on him, light and warm, like ash.
Give him to me, said Death.
As Kestrel neared sleep, it occurred to Arn that the emotion that spread through him, delicate and unable to be named at first because so unfamiliar, was peace. He held the feeling close before it could be lost. 39. The rain began the next morning and showed no signs of letting up. Mud sucked at Aaron's boots as he helped Kestrel ready her horse. The rain intensified, dropping down like little stones. Aaron squinted up at it.
Terrible day to ride.
He hated to see her go. She wiped water from her face, glancing over at Risha, whose head was tipped back under the rain, eyes closed.
Not for everyone, Kestrel said. And the rain will make it less likely a Valorian scout will notice that a small band is riding from camp.
True. The middle distance was a gray fog. Aaron raked dripping hair off his brow. He tried to be all right. His nerves sparked the way a blade does against the grinder. Kestrel touched his cheek. The rain is good for us.
Come here.
She tasted like the rain, cool and fresh and sweet. Her mouth warmed as he kissed her. He felt the way her clothes stuck to her skin. He forgot himself. She murmured,
I have something for you.
You needn't give me anything.
It's not a gift. It's for you to keep safe until I return.
She placed a speckled yellow feather on his palm. The rain fell in a veil behind her. The ground oozed. Mud splattered Aaron's trousers as he helped load a supply wagon. He was worried. He kept thinking about the bite and sting set in Kestrel's saddlebag, and the mud made his work sluggish. He grew frustrated.
Oh, I don't know, said Death, slightly smug. I like the mud.
Aaron stopped what he was doing.
You do?
There was no reply other than the rain. Aaron considered his army. He considered the generals. A strategy slowly formed, one that released an emotion close to pleasure. It was, he realized, the promise of revenge, right at the tips of his fingers. In the prince's tent, the rain loudly percussive against the canvas, Rashar studied the map marked by Aaron.
Your people will fight better in the rain, Aaron said. The rain might end by the time our army is in position. But the mud will remain. Think of that heavy Valorian armor the higher ranks wear. We wear leather. Most of them will flounder. Not on a paved road.
Rashar wasn't challenging Aaron's strategy, just prodding it to test its solidity.
Their cavalry is superior. The general would take into account the soggy terrain on either side of the road. Armed infantry fares worse than horses in mud. They'll try to flank us with cavalry. Yes.
Aaron tapped the map where he'd made notches on the even ground that bordered the road and ran open and smooth to the forest on either side.
Exactly.
What is it like, Kestrel asked Risha as they rode, to be gifted with weapons?
Coolly, the princess said.
You've no proof that I am.
But Kestrel remembered an archery contest on the palace lawn, and how Risha aimed arrows with studied mediocrity until one final arrow punched so hard into the target's center that it drove through the canvas halfway up its shaft.
I used to wish I were talented that way. Then I didn't. Now I do again.
Risha shrugged.
It's gained me little.
Rashar was even younger than we are when he brought you into Valorian territory. When you were captured.
Betrayed.
You didn't agree to go with him. The princess shifted in her saddle.
I was a mere child, and eager to prove myself. Children seek to please. They try so hard. My brother and sister used that against me.
Rashar has suffered for it.
And so...
Risha twisted in the saddle to meet Kestrel's gaze. The princess's eyes burned. Her brown skin was sleek with rain, her full mouth pinched.
You could speak with him, Risha snorted. You mean forgive. Forgiveness is so squishy, like all this mud.
Kestrel thought of her father's firelit face on Lerilyn Beach.
It drags you down, Risha said. You know this.
She had an uneasy feeling of not knowing what Risha would say next, but already not wanting to hear it.
You, who seek your own father's death.
The bodies lay tumbled in a ditch not far from the Scythia vineyards. The rain had washed away any tracks. Still, Kestrel understood the story. It leached into her, how the Emperor's company had seized the manor and dragged the Harani who lived there out onto the grounds, forced them forward. A girl in the ditch had lost her shoe. Her little foot was black with mud. The shoe. Kestrel searched for it in the rain, feeling a growing panic and need, as if finding a lost shoe could blot away the image of ashen corpses, the way a dead woman still gripped the child's hand. The inching insects. A shoe could take away the smell, the rot of it strong in the rain. A shoe could keep down the bile that rushed up Kestrel's throat. But when she found the shoe, stuck in the root of a tree, the inner leather sole still held the shape of the girl's foot. Kestrel could feel its imprint. The shoe took away none of the horror. It planted it deep in the bottom of Kestrel's belly, as solid as a grown man's kick. They crouched in the stubby vineyards with the other five Dakran soldiers. Risha eyed the manor's kitchen yard, the house's weakest entry point. Several of the house's windows glowed through the night rain. Kestrel licked her sour lips and gripped the satchel. She imagined the game tiles rattling inside their velvet bag. She remembered dining with the Emperor, a dessert served with a disintegrating sugar fork. How encounters with him had always felt like that, as though every tool at her disposal was crumbling in her grasp. She remembered how, on the Imperial Palace grounds, after a hunt, she'd realized that the Emperor would steal or maim her dog simply because she loved it.
"My father needs for you to love him best," Beric had said. "You need to watch yourself," he'd said. "If you play against my father, you'll lose."
A light hand touched her arm.
"I don't know you well," Risha's voice was low. "But I know what Verix has told me about you, and what I see for myself. You don't need to be gifted with a blade. You are your own best weapon."
Kestrel stared back at Risha, who was almost pure shadow, a mere glint of eyes. Kestrel felt a slow, slight throb, a shimmer in the blood. She knew it well. Her worst trait, her best trait, the desire to come out on top, to set her opponent under her thumb. A streak of pride. Her mind ringed with hungry rows of fox-like teeth. Later, at dawn, when the Emperor pulled Kestrel's dagger from its sheath and touched its tip to her throat, she remembered that Scythia's manor had always been a trap. The question had only been whether it was a trap she set for the Emperor, or one that she'd fall into. Kestrel touched Risha's hand.
"Thank you."
The seven of them moved through the dark to the house. The dawn broke bright, clear sky. A sheen of water wavered over the road toward Larilyn, deeper in the cracks between paving stones. Arryn and Roshard moved the army as quickly west as they could. They had reached the location Arryn had chosen. The first task, to unload the hundreds of sharpened staves Arryn had ordered made. The second, to drive them into the sodden earth bordering the road. The third, to set their last sacks of gunpowder on the road, a snug and deadly little bundle. And the fourth, to wait, to try not to think about Kestrel, about how she must have already reached Scythia by now, and might have already played bite and sting against the Emperor, and had won or lost. The seven of them wound their way through the night-shadowed corners of Scythia's manor. Risha moved with ethereal fluidity, and when they encountered a pair of Valorian soldiers stationed in a hallway, her knife split their skin as smoothly as if cutting through cream. The Valorians made no sound. It was quiet enough to hear the drip of blood. They accessed the upper floors and began checking bedrooms. Kestrel knew where they'd be situated. Harani architecture usually had bedrooms face east or west. Risha crept in alone, her posture stiffening with annoyance, when the other Dakrans made as if to accompany her. She let out a low hiss. They didn't follow. She'd return, her blade wetter than before.
"Enough of this," she whispered.
"We must go quietly," Kestrel reminded her.
"We need to get to the Emperor's room without waking the entire house. We can't fight them all."
Risha snorted.
"I can."
The princess's impatience wore thin. The next time they encountered Valorian guards, again a pair of them, she let a Dacran soldier shoot one of them with a crossbow, but pulled the other Valorian out of the quarrel's path at the same time that her other hand came down on the woman's mouth. Risha touched her knife to the fragile skin beneath the woman's wide eye.
"Stay silent," Risha whispered, "and you'll keep your eyes. Lead us to the Emperor's suite."
The soldier led them to a broad door made of tiger maple, the wood smooth in the Harani style, with little carving other than the rippled door jamb. An oil lamp glowed in the hallway sconce, its stained glass casting a jeweled light over the wood's natural stripes.
"Here?" Kestrel asked.
Light glowed through the door's keyhole. The woman nodded. Risha killed her. The body slumped. Blood welled up to Kestrel's boots. She made herself remember the girl's lost shoe, the bite and sting set, Arin's scar, the way he heard the god of death because he believed he had no one else, the small houses in the wheat fields, the bearing of her back to the cold tundra air, the way she had hoped that the nighttime drug would make her forget.
"Open the door," she whispered.
One of the Dacran men, selected by Roshar for his skill at this, knelt and unfolded a leather-wrapped set of tools. Then he inserted two of them, long and thin, like knitting needles, into the keyhole. He poked, then levered the tools until they heard the soft clunk of the lock's tumblers releasing. He eased the door open, softly, as if his hand were no more than a small gust of wind. Risha first, and Kestrel behind her, they entered the suite's antechamber. They were attacked by the Emperor's personal guard, who had been waiting as Aid listened to the clicking of the picked lock. Arin set the army into formation on the western road. He made the vanguard's ranks broad, running across the road and the bordering wet earth, all the way up to the trees. Behind the vanguard, the center ranks were confined to the road. Roshar's horse flicked its tail, shifting. The prince eyed the forest.
"Those trees turn this place into something resembling a ravine. We won't have much room to maneuver."
"Neither will they."
The morning light was sheer and fresh, as pale as the flesh of a lemon. Arin imagined squeezing it down his throat. It would taste like how he felt, stingingly alive. Kestrel couldn't count them, couldn't see how the guards carved open the bodies of the Dacran soldiers, couldn't fathom Risha's speed, the way the princess had shoved Kestrel against a wall, creating a halo of safety around her. The snick of Risha's knife against a windpipe, her swivel and dance, unerring strike, counter, bodies thumped to the floor.
"Hold!" someone called. "I want to see."
The Valorians pulled back. Risha's knife flicked blood as it arced through the air. She had no intention of obeying the voice. Kestrel caught her arm. The princess spun, her face frustrated, as if she'd been listening to a voice whose last words had been lost in the interruption. The Emperor stood at the threshold where the antechamber flowed into the rest of the suite, his posture light and easy. For a moment, there was no sound but the rain on the roof.
"You,"
he said wonderingly, as his gaze found Risha. Then Kestrel. His eyes widened in delight.
"And you,"
he laughed. The day blazed. The sun seemed to soar into the sky, all the way to its height. Arin waited. Nothing. Waited. Nothing. He touched the hard leather shell of his armor, hidden beneath it, his chest, his lungs, skin, a speckled yellow feather tucked inside his tunic pocket, right above his heart.
"Forget the feather," Death said. "You are the road, the sun, the sky, the horse beneath you."
Comforted, Arin said,
"The gods used to walk among us."
"True,"
said Death.
"Why did you leave?"
"Ah, sweet child, it was your people who left us." "Lady Kestrel, you look like a dirty little savage. What are you doing here?"
She tried to speak.
"Did you hope to murder me in my sleep?"
Her throat was too dry.
"Maybe you've come for court gossip," Surely the barbarian princess has told you everything of interest. No.
Kestrel swallowed. She saw her hand gripping her dagger. The knuckles were white knobs.
You want news of your father, I imagine. Let me tell you, he doesn't mourn you.
Kestrel heard the Emperor as if from far away.
Doesn't miss you. He never did. You remember how little time he spent at home? How awkward he became in your company? You had to beg him to stay in the capital. Oh, yes, I heard. And here a secret for you. He was relieved when you were sent north. I saw how a burden had been lifted from his shoulders. He looked lighter, younger, free.
The Emperor looked from her to Risha to the Dakran soldiers, dead on the bloody floor.
You're resourceful, Kestrel. I'll give you that. You've survived the mines, the tundra, the war, thus far. You've made...
His gaze flicked again to Risha.
Interesting allies. But my guard outnumbers you both, and it will take an instant for me to rouse the entire house. I don't have many regrets, but my decision to imprison rather than kill you smacks of squeamishness. Or, shall I say, an unnecessary concern for your father's well-being. Do you know, he hasn't mentioned you once since he told me of your treason.
He wouldn't, no matter what he feels.
Regardless, the Emperor said softly, I could have you killed right now, and he'd never know. And if he did, why would he care? What would the life of one dishonorable would-be assassin mean to him?
I didn't come here to murder you. He bit back a thin smile. She said, I came to challenge you.
Oh?
One game of bite and sting. If I win, you'll end the war. Leave. Cross the sea with every last Valorian. Never return.
The Emperor made a surprised half-laugh of a sound. He lightly traced the deepest line of his brow, then unfolded his hand in a flourish.
What would I gain, should I win?
What you like, whatever I can give you. He tapped one finger to his lips, considering.
That's not much.
I'm sure you can think of something.
And if I agree, and lose, you'd trust me to keep my word.
A Valorian honors his word.
Yes,
he said, drawing out the word.
He does.
Risha goes free, no matter what the outcome. I'll wait here, said the princess. With your guards, if you like.
She gave them a disdainful look, making clear that she thought little of their chances of survival if she chose to finish what she'd started.
Until the game is done, Kestrel said. We play in private.
You set quite a lot of terms, the Emperor said. But this particular one, I wouldn't have any other way.
So you agree?
I confess, I'm curious.
Do you agree?
A fair warning. I'm better at this than you are.
We shall see.
Arryn heard a crash in the trees. A Harani scout. He ran to Arryn, his face shiny with sweat. The Valorians were coming. The Emperor led her to his bedroom. The summer hangings on the bed were gauzy, the sheets disturbed. She could see the dent left in a pillow by his head. The room smelled of his oils, powdery pepper, bitingly sweet balsam. Rain tapped the black window panes.
Wash your face, he said.
There was a mirrored basin in the corner. Kestrel did as ordered, though her face wasn't particularly dirty. She was startled by the stranger in the glass and tried not to stare at herself. She caught a glimpse of shocked, light eyes, made lighter by tanned and freckled skin. A strong face. She folded the towel and joined the Emperor where he stood near an octagonal table. He had produced a bottle of wine and two glasses.
I'll serve, she said,
which made him give her a sleek look of amusement. She poured the red wine, but neither of them touched their glasses, and they both knew that the other suspected that some sleight of hand had poisoned the cup.
Disarm, he said.
I will, if you do the same.
He unbuckled his dagger and set it gently yet heavily on the table. Her fingers fumbled as she undid hers. The dagger Aaron had made her looked plain next to the Emperor's, but strong, like her unexpected face in the mirror.
Interesting.
The Emperor stroked it where it lay.
A new acquisition. Perhaps this will be my prize when I win.
If that's what you want.
I haven't decided what I want.
She opened the satchel, set the velvet bag of tiles on the table, and moved to Set.
Not yet.
He held out his hand. She gave him the satchel, which he examined. Satisfied that it contained nothing else, he dropped it to the floor, then said,
You'll have no objection, I'm sure, if I make certain that you hide no weapons on your person.
Her skin prickled. I give you my word that I don't.
The word of a traitor is hardly to be trusted.
So she stood rigid as his hands moved over her unarmored body. They didn't linger, except when he pressed his fingers to her throat, and then pressed harder to feel her pulse jump and run. He said,
You're welcome to do the same to me.
No.
Are you sure?
He seemed to dare her to admit that she didn't want to touch him. I trust you.
Well then, little liar, let's play.
The approaching Valorian army shone in a silver river under the sun. Aaron looked through a spyglass. He couldn't find the general. There was a thin, whistling whine. Aaron lowered the spyglass. The whine stopped. A cry of pain. An arrow studded into a Harani soldier's throat. More arrows sped through the air. Valorian rangers were shooting at them from the trees on either side of the road. They sat. Kestrel, her back to the bed, loosened the velvet bag's tie and poured the tiles onto the table. She reached to mix the tiles, but as she'd thought he might, the Emperor stopped her.
Let's confirm that this set is standard, shall we? He said.
He checked the tiles to account for their values. When he saw that the set showed the proper amount of each bite and sting tile, he turned them onto their faces and mixed them. His face was calm, but his gestures were eager. He touched each tile, but barely. He wanted to get to the game. Kestrel studied his smooth expression. He didn't seem to notice that four ivory tiles were shinier than the rest. The gloom of the late hour helped. He drew his tiles. Her stomach clenched to see the four shiny tiles left in the boneyard, from which she and the Emperor would pull tiles throughout the game. She drew her own hand. Aaron had warned her that when she had a high chance of winning, her very lack of tells showed her confidence.
I don't think most people notice, he'd said. Your expression doesn't change. You've no tick or gesture. I just get the sense that there's an energy inside you I can't reach, and that if I did, it'd strike like lightning.
She tried not to think about her plan, worrying that even the mere thought of it would show on her face. She felt her expression harden, as clay does in a kiln. Play, Kestrel. She set down her first tile. The Emperor did the same. She found herself praying to Aaron's god. Please, let this be over soon. But she heard no answer.
Stand your ground,
Rishar shouted as arrows drove into the army. Eastern crossbows fired into the trees. Rishar ordered Zash, his second-in-command, to lead a company into the forest to the left of the road. Rishar would take another company to the right.
We'll take care of the rangers. You, he said to Aaron, take command of the road.
Aaron snagged the prince's shoulder.
You'll get bogged down in the mud. The rangers will shoot everyone down on the open land before you reach the trees. Not much choice. Continue to return fire. The Dekran archers are plains people. They're good. They're not gods. They will be to protect their prince.
Then Rishar was gone, and Aaron snapped his attention back to the road, because the enemy was upon them, thundering down the road. Almost here, almost here, here. As they played, the rain lessened and stopped. The glasses of wine sat untouched. The boneyard still held the four shiny tiles hidden among the others. It was the Emperor's turn. He reached for a tile, then paused, too much drama in his movements. He wasn't truly hesitant, or even pretending to be hesitant, but rather making an open mockery of hesitancy that he knew she'd recognize as such.